Hello, everybody. How are we all doing? Another week, maternity live. As per usual, I have so much to say, so much to share, so much to dive deep on. I almost just sang that song, like, so much to do, so much to see, so what's wrong with taking the back street? Okay. This week's episode is chock full of goodness, as all the episodes are, but you know, I just try to raise the bar for myself every week, and thus for all of you who spend an hour out of your week to graciously listen to my podcast. So this week I'm joined by Tanya Zuckerbrot, who's the creator of the F Factor Diet. F stands for fiber. And as those of you who have been following me and listening to this podcast know that I have been open about my weight journey, right? Whether that's weight loss around my wedding, weight gain around this pregnancy. I just think weight insecurity in general in terms of being a human being in this world. And so I have definitely incorporated aspects of F Factor into my life at various points in time, because I think people in general know that fiber is something that, like, you need to have and is good for you. But I wanted to hear from the fiber source and really understand, like, what fiber does to your body and why it is so important and why we need it. And so Tanya and I sat down. Well, we didn't actually sit down. We zoomed in. But I do hope one day we will sit down, because we had an awesome conversation about how she built her business and the community around her business, which is absolutely incredible. And then we obviously got into the weeds on just living a healthy lifestyle, whether you are not pregnant at all, whether you are pregnant, whether you are postpartum, how to raise kids who embrace a healthy lifestyle. And so really excited for you all to hear that conversation. I took a lot away from it and definitely started incorporating a lot more of the F Factor elements into my own diet. And I hope that you will too. So without further ado, let's get into the big three so that we waste not a minute here. And big topic number one is just around this idea of nesting. Like, people keep asking me if I'm nesting, and I don't think that I am nesting at all by any means, but I do think that this quarantine has me nesting to some degree, in the sense that, like, all I do is cook, attempt to bake, and spend all of my time cleaning. And I just want to talk on the cleaning piece for a second, because they do say, like, that when you have a newborn, toddler, young kids, like, you find that you spend all of your time cleaning. And so I do feel like this is preparing me for that, because we're living in our house 24/7. You know, we make every meal, and so there's so many dishes all the time. I mean, people talk about having raw hands from washing your hands all the time, which you should of course be doing, but, like, let's talk about the raw hands from doing the dishes. I know you know what I'm talking about, and it is not pleasant. But Zach has fully made the living dining area his workspace. I'm in the bedroom. And I just find that, like, being in our house 24/7, living in New York City, which is probably the dustiest place on earth. I mean, you can sweep and vacuum all day long, but it's like every day you wake up, it's like Groundhog Day, and the dust is just back exactly where it was when you cleaned it the day before. And I just am spending most of my time just, like, always straightening up the house. And this is honestly where Zach and I get into little tiffs. And I'm not even going to lie about that, right? Because we get into tiffs about the dishwasher. And here's why. Because he hates the way that I stack the dishwasher, and I hate the way that he stacks the dishwasher. And I am of the mindset that, like, we have a lot of dishes and we need to find a way to, like, get them all in there. And he is of the mindset that, like, he organizes the dishwasher and, like, all the plates are in an area all straight together, and then all the silverware, and, you know, if we don't have room for it, we'll hand wash it. And I am like, throw it all in there as much as you can get. We gotta operationalize this bitch. And I'm not gonna lie, like, a week and a half ago, I broke the dishwasher. And, you know, I don't really think it was my fault, of course, but apparently I stacked the dishes a little too high, and the propeller thing that is underneath the top shelf that really just helps get everything going, I guess, like, broke off, and Zach had to fix the dishwasher. And he tells me all the time that I'm doing it wrong, but it's like, I'm not doing it wrong. Like, we have a lot of dishes that have to get cleaned, and, like, this is how it's gonna get done. Honestly, for the year and a half that we've lived here, like, the dishwasher has only broken one time, and that was a week ago. So honestly, I think I'm doing fine. But, like, can we just talk about all the things that need to get done all the time? Like, laundry we do once a week. We've always done once a week, but everything we're wearing is so big. Big sweatshirts, big sweatpants, big pajamas. And so it's like it just piles up, and it feels like so much more than it normally is. We wash the sheets once a week and change the sheets. And it's just like, just always feels like there's so much going on. And that's not, like, outside the realm of, like, what we normally do, but it's just like the volume, because we're in our house 24/7, is it just feels compounded. So, you know, things like towels. Can we just talk about towels for a second?
So we have dark blue and dark gray towels. So like, I don't actually ever know how dirty they are. And I recently found out that your bath towel is home to 500 times more bacteria than a toilet seat, which is so gross. So that's why I'm so glad I found Mizzou. Mizzou is a self-cleaning bath towel that is guaranteed to stay 99.9% bacteria-free forever. These towels are so chic. They're so soft. On the chic front, it has a color-changing stripe down the center, which detects things like sweat and dirt and grime, lets you know when it needs a wash. And also, I just personally love a stripe. And then on the soft front, it's made from one of the softest cottons on earth. It makes it perfect for people with sensitive skin, which Zach has, and for babies, which we will have soon. It's also hyper-absorbent, quick-drying. These towels dry 3 times faster than the average towel, and I can't stress the cleanliness piece enough. Literally, these towels are proven to eliminate 99.9% of bacteria, mold, mites, fungus, viruses on contact. Like, did you even know that stuff lived on your towel? Because honestly, I'm going to admit that I did not. The best thing about a Mizzou towel is that it really gives you peace of mind and leaves you knowing and feeling like you are clean after the fact. It's so refreshing, both physically and mentally. I know I can't go back to normal towels. And if you're having second thoughts about your own towel, go to MizzouTowel.com and get 60% off. They're having a 50% off sale and a 10% off coupon I can give you. So use code LIVE, L-I-V, at checkout, and you can get a Mizzou bath towel, hand towel, or a whole new set for even cheaper than normal towels. And if you order now, you can also get free and fast delivery so you can say goodbye to your old, smelly, dirty towel forever. Just go to MizzouTowel.com, that's M-I-Z-U-T-O-W-E-L.com, and enter LIVE at checkout for over 60% off and free shipping.
Topic number two that I want to address, which I think a lot of people are talking about because I'm just seeing memes about it everywhere, but it's just like this whole notion of grooming. And I'll be honest, last week I spoke about like some of the benefits on the grooming side, right? It's like we're not touching our hair as much. We're not putting hot tools to it. So we're giving it the opportunity to grow and be free. And we're going to come out of quarantine with amazing hair. But what about the hair on the rest of our bodies? I mean, like, I'm not going to lie and tell you that like I was the world's greatest leg shaver in the wintertime anyway, but it's April. And half the time I like don't even remember what month or day of the week it is. Like Zach's parents' anniversary was a few weeks ago. And I said to Zach, I'm like, what day is it that like it is the day of their anniversary? And he was like, it's April. And it hadn't reconciled in my mind that it's April, but the other night we were on a girls' night in Zoom, and honestly, the entire conversation was like what we would do when this is all over and the first grooming thing we would do for ourselves. I think for me, it would probably be get a pedicure and a monster leg rub. Just obviously the feet get super puffy and swollen during pregnancy, and I just feel like I just need them to be totally rubbed down. But you know, I cut my nails for the first time in like a very long time. And that's not because I get manicures so often, but like they just never really grow, or I like bite them or pick at them, like in all honesty. And the prenatals just make everything grow. Like my leg hair is so thick. I have like weird hairs on my belly. Like I'm not even going to deny that. It's just like, these are the things that happen. And I just feel like that compounded with the fact that we are in quarantine. It's like, should I shave my legs to not leave the house? Like, no. But also, like, I should shave my legs because, like, I need to shave my legs. But also, like, I'm pregnant. Like, no offense. I can't really, like, bend down and shave my legs. Honestly, I'm just being honest with you guys because that's, like, what I do and I'm honest. But I just feel like the whole grooming thing in general, like, there's so many things. I can't wait to get my hair blown out just, like, once and for all to just see the length of it. And, you know, maybe do some waxing across all the different body parts and manicure. Obviously, the pedicure I said is like a massage even, you know, like my body is in, we're getting up there in the third trimester. Like there's so many things. I think, you know, to some extent we take, you know, all those things that we treat ourselves with for granted, but like we really, I mean, we need them. Anywho, that's just my thoughts on grooming because it's wild times out here, you guys. My last and final bullet point for all of you today I really enjoyed doing this a few weeks back, but taking questions and advice from my listeners. So I'm temporarily calling this segment Ask Liv until I can think of a better name, but I want to share from a listener, and I asked her if I could share, and I'm not sharing her name, but she said I could share, so here I am sharing. On the professional front, I graduated from college in May and started my dream job in June. My job is everything I could have asked for right out of college, except location. I moved to a new city 8 hours from any family, and I was looking forward to a new adventure in a new city. I went to college pretty far away, and it was the best experience for me personally and professionally. I've been with the company for 10 months, and I've had many ups and downs. My manager went on maternity leave as soon as I finished training. Notice how I almost said maternity leave, but you know. My new manager was brand new and taking on the job of two people who had 5+ years of experience in the role. I felt I didn't get the help I needed as I was starting, and our team leader was pushing me far beyond my role and my capabilities. With time, I rose to the challenge. I'm grateful for the experience, no matter how many long and hard days it took. My manager came back and I simply began to thrive in my role. And about 2 months after my manager came back, she then left the company. And then we went through a reorg and started working with a new team. But this reorg has been amazing for our team, both old and new. And I have such high hopes for our potential. So with all that background, here's my dilemma. Although I'm happy with my position at work, I'm miserable in my personal life. I dread the weekends. I had a great group of friends when they suddenly stopped inviting me to things and stopped talking to me altogether. I want to move desperately. I hate everything about the city I'm living in, and honestly, I have no friends. I do love my job, but I've never been so miserable in my personal life. Would it be crazy to leave a job where I have plenty to learn but don't intend to be with the company long term simply because I hate my personal life? Wow, I have so much to say about this, and I think a lot of it stems from how said listener actually reached out and shared the question, which is really, she focused, I would say, 75% on the job piece. And I almost feel like, you know, you've gone through all these ups and downs on the job front. Maybe it's time to reprioritize and now spend 75% of your time really focusing on yourself. And maybe you have shitty friends, which is definitely a possibility, but maybe your friends felt like they weren't a priority because it does feel like so much of what consumes your mind is around the professional side of yourself. And so you said something very interesting in what you wrote, and I just want to read it. With time, I rose to the challenge. I'm grateful for the experience, no matter how many long and hard days it took. And I guess the one piece of advice that I would give to you is take that same sentiment and potentially apply it to your personal life before you, you know, throw in the towel and move to another city or move back home. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, you've been there for less than a year. You're taking this risk. You do like what you're doing, and you've invested so much in your professional development that, you know, just because these group of friends stink doesn't mean that there aren't other people in the entire city that you could be friends with. And there's things like groups that you can be a part of. You know, you can meet people through work, you can meet people on the internet, you know, just, I think there's other ways to find new groups of friends. And so my advice to you would be, do not throw in the towel just yet, because you have invested so much of yourself and you have been getting great experience, which was important to you. But focus a little bit more of your time on the personal side of things. And to be honest with you, now that we're in this quarantine, I would actually use this as a time to re-engage with those friends and, you know, see what the hell is up, or try to find it as a time to make some new friends. If you have a roommate and being friends with your roommate's friends, or making friendships with people through work, you know, I would use this time to like put yourself out there, maybe join a local Facebook group or, you know, something that really helps to potentially move your personal life forward a little bit more, considering you've invested a lot in your professional. And that is my advice on this Ask Liv segment. I hope that more of you will send your advice, questions, feedback to me, maternitylivepod@gmail.com, and I will be happy to answer them on this podcast. And so without further ado, I want to now pivot the conversation to our guest, Tanya Zuckerbrot from the F Factor Diet, so that we can dive deep on everything from fiber, building a brand, the power of community, and all the healthy tips and tricks that she has so graciously shared with all of you. So,
Tanya, welcome to Maternity Live. I'm so excited to have you here on the podcast. F Factor is kind of like a freaking phenomenon. I wish phenomenon started with an F, because then it would be totally on brand for you. But really, it's amazing. You've been in business now for 20 years, which started well before social media, digital marketing in general. And your brand is, you know, and your lifestyle essentially is, you know, even more popular than ever before. And especially during these crazy quarantine times, I'd love to take it back to the very beginning, how you started F Factor and really like the amazing female entrepreneurship story behind the brand, behind your business.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yeah, it's so exciting to see how the brand has grown. And above all, it's because my initial interest was just to, you know, touch as many lives as possible. So to see that more and more people are getting to know F Factor, understanding the science that supports it, and living the F Factor way and receiving the benefits, it just makes me, you know, so happy. But yes, the practice did start 20 years ago, and it was way before F Factor, you know, even as a program existed. I simply was a clinical dietitian working on the Upper East Side of Manhattan out of my apartment, frankly, and I was working off of the referrals of cardiologists and endocrinologists. So weight loss was like the furthest thing on my mind. I wanted to apply nutrition to patients where I could improve their health status and get them off of medications or maybe reverse a clinical condition. So the doctors who were referring the most patients to me were cardiologists and endocrinologists, because cardiovascular patients and diabetics really can impact their health through their diets. And therefore, my job was to create programs for them that would enhance the medical care they were receiving. For the cardiovascular patients, the goal is to lower cholesterol. For diabetic patients, the goal is to manage sugars. And therefore, I created diet programs that would honor those goals. After following my programs for a few months, they returned to their doctors for a repeat blood workup. And all the cardiovascular patients found that their cholesterol had gone down. Their triglycerides had come down. All the diabetic patients were reporting that they had better blood sugar control. So of course that pleased me, but I had expected that. That was the point. But something else occurred. All these patients were reporting weight loss. And that left me scratching my head, because I'm like, wait, why is everyone losing weight? I didn't set out to produce weight loss. I just set out to improve their health. So when I looked at these two diets that were pretty different, I mean, the cardiovascular diet plan was about lowering saturated fat, and the diabetic plan was really about managing sugars and reducing refined sugars, I realized that I was prescribing a lot of fiber to both these patient populations. Now, why fiber? Well, fiber binds with cholesterol and pulls it out of the body. And fiber also slows down gastric emptying, so that gives diabetics better blood sugar control. The reason the fiber, though, is producing weight loss is fiber has zero calories. It fills you up for hours. It revs up your metabolism, which speeds up weight loss. And fiber binds with fat and calories in other foods and ushers it out of the body. So you can imagine, here I am as this clinical dietitian, understanding the clinical merits of fiber, never knowing that fiber had this miraculous property to help people lose weight without hunger. And that was the birth of F Factor as a weight management program.
And I think the funny thing about fiber, though, is like when you think about fiber, you think it's just like, you know, leafy green vegetables, or maybe just like something that, you know, not everybody likes vegetables. I happen to actually really like vegetables, but I think one of the things that F Factor does is like you make meals and the experience around eating, it's almost like a fun, enjoyable thing. Like there's, you can eat out, you know, you yourself post all these awesome recipes. You make something on Instagram, then you see it, you know, 10 times over just right after the fact. And I think people have a visceral reaction to the word diet. And then I think when you add fiber diet, it just sounds like it's going to be like the worst thing ever. But you have this community of people who are like so excited about fiber. And how did you really think about, did that happen inadvertently? Or is that just, you know, a way to really make the lifestyle that much more exciting for people to partake in?
I mean, I wish that I was that forward thinking and I knew fiber was going to become this mainstream nutrient and it was going to be as popular as it is today. But in full transparency, when I first came out with the F Factor diet, it was at a time when low carb diets was really popular. And I think that's why it took F Factor a while to sort of catch up, to these other popular diets, because it was counterintuitive. You know, fiber is only found in carbs, and everyone's like, we're not eating carbs. And then, of course, adding insult to injury, it's like, oh, fiber? Is that Metamucil? Is that prunes, right? I mean, that's like what grandmas eat, not young, sexy, hot girls, you know, doing, you know, yoga and spin classes. So I think the message was a little bit challenging, and there was also a limit to the high fiber foods that were available 20 years ago. Luckily for me, once I had understood the science, I never veered from it. You know, I feel that diets do come and go, and it's because many of them are based on trends. The reason F Factor has remained popular, it's because it's based on science, and science does not ebb and flow with trends. And therefore, I never veered away from this fiber message. Like, once I understood it, I was like, wait, this is the coolest thing ever. This is crazy. Fiber is found in natural foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, cereals, like so many yummy foods. It's healthy, it's all natural, has 0 grams of carbs, no sugar, and the more of it you eat, the more weight you lose. The more of it you eat, the healthier you get. The more of it you eat, the faster your metabolism. Like, I had this aha moment, and therefore I never abandoned it. So while at the beginning my message was quiet and there weren't that many people who knew it, I just kept beating the drum louder and louder and louder. And then more and more science started to come out that supported this messaging. And now fiber is mainstream. I mean, you cannot open up a woman's magazine, a men's health magazine, without hearing about fiber. In fact, when you go to the supermarket, there are thousands of products making high fiber claims on their packaging. It's actually one of the fastest growing demographics of new foods introduced to the marketplace are those with fiber, because finally people understand that the more fiber you eat, the more weight you can lose without hunger.
And how do you feel about those? Like, I literally just ate like a high fiber wrap not even 20 minutes ago, right? So it's like, is it the same level of fiber, or is it better to get fiber from things like vegetables and cereal and things that you like, all bran and those sorts of things?
Yeah. I mean, look, fiber comes in many shapes and sizes. Fiber comes in many whole foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, and legumes. Protein has no fiber, so anyone trying to get fiber from chicken, you're not going to get it there, nor cheese or eggs. So you really need fruits and vegetables and whole grains. And then fiber, of course, is found in supplements. You know, there's fiber powders, and then there's food that has been supplemented with fiber. You'll see like yogurt with fiber. You'll see beverages with fiber. So as fiber becomes more popular, you're going to get it in many forms. Of course, whole foods should always be the first way that you attempt to get fiber, because whole foods are also going to have vitamins and nutrients, and they also taste good, right? Like, you want to feel full, you want to crunch on foods or chew on foods. So it's easy to get fiber from foods. Raspberries have 8 grams of fiber. Broccoli has 3 grams of fiber. The goal is to get to 35 grams of fiber per day. The problem, Olivia, is that in this country, we are in a fiber deficit, meaning we don't get enough fiber. And this is because due to advents in technology, meaning as we've become more technologically advanced, we have refined and processed all our food. So food that once began as whole food, like whole grains, became Wonder Bread. Whole fruit became fruit juice, like, you know, in a plastic jug. Whole potatoes became boxes of potato flakes. And what they know with certainty, and this is what they call epidemiologically, they have found that as a nation, as our fiber intake has gone down, there's an inverse correlation with disease and obesity going up. So imagine that. We used to eat a lot more fiber in this country. And as we process our foods and start to eat more prepackaged foods, we start to get fatter and less healthy. We saw an increase in cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and cancer, and they're directly correlated. So we need to eat in a way that not only helps us manage our waistlines, but increases our chances for longevity. And fiber will do that.
It's funny that you actually talk about that, because I couldn't agree more. And I also kind of like used myself as an experiment in terms of understanding that. I mean, I'm not like the best case to do it right now, just because I'm obviously pregnant and I'm not following any like real diet, other than what I'm trying to do is just eat like more real foods and like things that are really just, you know, naturally like from the ground, and making sure that I get enough protein. And I actually am a big fan of the powders just in smoothies and things, because I do realize in my own self, like making sure that I get fiber, especially while pregnant, is super important. And I find that I just feel so much better when I eat like normal, like eat normally. And I think that's actually one silver lining in all of this crazy corona times is like everybody's making their food at home and they have the opportunity to just make it that much healthier, to focus on having a plate that has like whole grains, protein, and leafy greens.
Yeah. You know, I want to speak to something that you mentioned at the beginning of this, and I'm really glad you raised it when you talked about the word diet. When we hear the word diet, you know, when you're like, I'm not on a diet right now, I'm like, it's okay to be on a diet. A diet does not need to mean weight loss. A diet simply means a pattern of eating. If you're pregnant and you're like, I maintain a kosher diet, you're not eating kosher in order to lose weight. You're eating kosher because it's honoring your ideals. So if you were to actually Google the word diet, it simply means a pattern of eating for man or mammal. It's just a pattern of eating. So you could have a vegan diet, you could have a kosher diet. Those diets have nothing to do with weight loss. To me, F factor is a different kind of pattern of eating. It combines fiber and protein at every meal. And therefore, you can embrace the F factor diet or way of life during pregnancy. And I actually recommend that you do, because it is based on whole foods. You obviously need protein. Protein is essential for cell regeneration and cell growth. And look, you're growing a baby inside you. You absolutely need protein right now. And you absolutely need carbs, because with growth, you're burning calories and you don't want to waste away. So you want to make sure you're getting healthy carbs. But fiber is so essential, Olivia, to a healthy pregnancy. And I'm going to, if you don't mind, I can share why.
Please share why.
Okay. I just know I'm talking a lot. I'm like, I probably should like come up for air.
No, I love it. It's so true, because also I totally agree what you say about diet. It's like, I feel like people have just like substituted it for the word lifestyle just because there is a stigma around the word diet, but you're right. Like it means what it means. It's just a word. I think where people talk about being like restrictive, or like there are ways where like a diet could be unhealthy, but the reality is like, you're right. It's just a pattern of eating.
Of course. And look, I understand that when people hear the word diet, what automatically comes to mind is deprivation, denial, hunger, and weight loss. I think we all can agree. But that's because society has caused us to believe it. We're actually misusing the word. It's not what it was intended to mean. It's just a pattern. So I do encourage people to have a healthy diet. And don't think of yourself as being on a diet. Think of yourself as a healthy eater. You know, the word diet, I think, as I said, it's almost like shameful. Like, you don't want to admit that you're on a diet. It's almost that you're admitting that you're not comfortable with yourself or you're not good enough, right? It's like, imagine going on a first date with a guy and being like, hey, I'm on a diet.
No. Right.
But you would, but if he was like, hey, do you work out? Yeah, I love to work out. Do you consider yourself a healthy eater? Yeah, of course. Those are things that we're proud of. Think of yourself as beginning a new way of eating that's honoring your intentions to look and feel your best. That if you feel that your diet empowers you, that it's that it makes you feel good, then there's no shame involved. And that really is like my mission. I really want to change the way people react to the word diet, and I want to educate them and empower them and inspire them to eat in a way that allows them to look and feel their best without compromising their lifestyle, but at the same time, something that supports their health. So even today, when F Factor is recognized as like a player in the weight loss space, I remind every follower or every listener, the weight loss that happens is a byproduct of getting you healthy. When you focus on eating healthfully, your body will gravitate towards a healthy weight.
So as I mentioned, I actually have used some of the powders during the pregnancy, and I love that they're safe for pregnancy. And so how does F Factor approach pregnant clients overall? Obviously, you are a mom, so you've been pregnant in your life. You've had girls in your office who have been pregnant. You have clients who have been pregnant, trying to get pregnant postpartum. So how do you think about fiber as it relates to the, you know, pre and postpartum experience? And then also specifically while you're pregnant, when you're not necessarily maybe eating the best, or you're craving things that are maybe not the best for you?
Yeah, no, that's such a great question. I mean, I've been in private practice for 20 years. I've counseled thousands of pregnant women, and I've been a client myself. I've been pregnant twice, one with my son and then with twin girls. And I followed the F Factor way for both my pregnancies and delivered two-term really healthy pregnancies and healthy babies. So a proper diet, whether it's F Factor or any other well-balanced diet, is essential to get you ready for pregnancy and to get your body ready in order to carry to term. So when someone even says to me, I'm thinking about getting pregnant, I'm like, all right, let's get started. You know, let's get rid of all the processed foods. We could start moving to more organic choices, but your body's a temple. Let's detoxify it. Let's get rid of things that aren't going to serve you. And let's start boosting immunity. Let's start boosting your vitamin and nutrient content. Let's make sure you have ample muscle mass. So we actually prepare our clients for getting pregnant. And if a client is overweight, we really do recommend that they lose some unnecessary body fat before pregnancy, because studies have found that the more overweight you are during pregnancy, the greater the chances of gestational diabetes and preeclampsia. So those are serious clinical terms. This is not about getting to an ideal body weight for vanity's sake. It's to ensure that you have a healthy pregnancy for you and for your unborn fetus. So we always talk about preparing the body for pregnancy, eating a nutrient-dense diet, fruits, vegetables, whole grains. And then once someone does get pregnant, we pivot a little, because due to pregnancy, you do need to increase caloric intake by around 300 calories, but we want them coming from nutrient-dense foods. Now, of course, pregnancy is never a time for weight loss. In fact, you should be gaining, after the first trimester, approximately 1 pound per week. So with that being said, why would we want to be eating fiber? Well, fiber is so important during pregnancy, Olivia. Number one, when you are ready to get pregnant, you start taking a prenatal vitamin. I'm sure you did, correct?
That is correct. I'm still taking my prenatal vitamin.
Exactly. Well, you take it throughout your pregnancy, but typically when women start to consider getting pregnant, they start taking a prenatal.
Yes.
Because it's chock full of those vitamins and nutrients that are really important, such as folate, which helps to prevent neural tube defects. And, you know, there are just all these vitamins and nutrients that we may not get enough of through foods. Prenatals are notoriously high in iron, because iron is a really essential nutrient. The problem is iron is binding, and that is why so many women, when they start taking the prenatal vitamin, get constipated. And constipation can lead to hemorrhoids. So a high fiber diet while you're taking your prenatal vitamin can help to offset that. The fiber can ensure that your stool stays soft so that you don't get impacted, which can lead, as I said, to straining and to hemorrhoids. So that's one of the reasons fiber is so essential, just to offset the iron in your prenatal. Number two, a high fiber diet can help to manage your blood sugar levels. Gestational diabetes occurs during pregnancy when women actually become diabetic. It means that they have poor blood sugar control. Usually everyone takes a glucose tolerance test. And look, gestational diabetes is a condition that can develop in women who have never had any history of diabetes. It occurs during pregnancy and it affects your blood sugar control. And what happens is it can lead to excessive birth weight and preterm labor. Now, if you recall, F-Factor began as a program for diabetics. I have been prescribing the F-Factor diet for so many pregnant women who get referred to me by their OBGYNs once they have been diagnosed with gestational diabetes. And eating the F-Factor way has allowed them to manage their blood sugar levels safely and naturally. So I cannot recommend eating a high-fiber diet more than for that reason alone during pregnancy.
So interesting. That makes so much sense. The one thing I wanted to touch upon that you said is, like, one of my favorite things about just like following you and following F-Factor is, like, in addition to really trying to reimagine the word diet, I feel like you remove some of the stigma around like bowel movements, just like inadvertently because of fiber. And it's just so funny, but it is true. Like, people talk about constipation in pregnant women, you know, from the second you find out you're pregnant until obviously when you deliver, but people actually also are now considering it like an early symptom of pregnancy. Like, if you are constipated, a lot of people are like, I felt constipated and I felt like I knew I was pregnant. So it is really funny that, like, you know, there are so many benefits obviously for fiber in pregnancy, especially like, I think the pre-message, I didn't have the same situation in the sense that I think I always thought that I would, you know, try to get to the, you know, peak physical shape that I could get into before starting to try. But obviously that's not necessarily sometimes how the world works. And for me, like, it just happened and it was such a blessing, but I definitely was like coming off of my trip from Italy where I was not on the F-Factor diet. And so you kind of go from wherever you are. I think if you have the mental state and the time to really prepare your body, you obviously should, because of so many of the benefits. But I think, like, if you don't, then I think eating the F-Factor way is a really good way to kind of maybe retroactively help yourself as much as you possibly can, given the circumstances.
Exactly. It is never too late to begin. In fact, what studies have found in the new recommendations for guidelines for weight gain, if you actually are going into your pregnancy heavier, they actually recommend less weight gain. So, you know, for all your listeners, and, you know, I know we joke that I'm the fiber queen, it's all about weight management. My background is clinical in nature. You know, I received my master's degree from NYU. My residency was at New York University, and my rotations included oncology, renal, cardiovascular rotations. So I have worked, you know, in a hospital with pregnant women post-delivery, during pregnancy. They've had diabetes, and for whatever reason, they didn't go to primary care. They came into the hospital. I have always looked at food as medicine. On the other hand, of course, it can be viewed as poison if you eat really poorly. But for me, proper nutrition and eating the F factor way during pregnancy is about ensuring the health of your unborn fetus and, of course, for the mom who's carrying. These are all things that are essential to a healthy pregnancy. But the best part is, if these habits become your new normal during pregnancy, my hope is that you continue them after you deliver, and you're able to maintain good health and get back to your pre-pregnancy weight sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think that's what's like most interesting for me too, is like, I think also like this is my first pregnancy, and not like I consider myself like somebody that likes to know a little bit about everything. But I do think there is a misconception where people go into pregnancy and they're like, I'm gonna eat whatever I want. Like, it's a free for all. I'm like, this is the time to gain weight, and you have cravings, and you know, everyone's like sitting around with a tub of ice cream. And it's like, I think even I, to some extent, especially when I first found out I was pregnant, I was just like, okay, great, like game over. But it's actually like, it makes you one, not feel good. And then two, like the more doctor's appointments you go to, the more you find out about things like gestational diabetes and preeclampsia, you realize like just the power of what you put in your body and the effect that it has on your baby. And then obviously on yourself. And then like, you know, I think a lot of times people feel like, and I would say that I would probably have felt this way too without educating myself, is like, okay, well, there's nothing that I can do for the next 9 months. So like, I'll deal with it in the postpartum. And I think it actually makes the postpartum harder if you're not preparing for it prior to, because it is just really about the mindset. I mean, this conversation is really like getting me like all excited to like want to rev up more of my fiber and just be even smarter about my diet, just because I do know that not only will that be, you know, obviously healthy for me where I am in my pregnancy now, but also the postpartum effects. I think postpartum is just so hard in general. This is like one more thing. Like, ease up on yourself and make it easy for yourself by being good to yourself now.
I'm so happy to hear the enthusiasm in your voice, because I really wanted this to be an upbeat conversation where we're empowering your listeners who are either thinking about getting pregnant or are pregnant to recognize that being healthy during pregnancy does not have to feel like a burden, and it shouldn't feel that you don't get to enjoy yummy foods. So I have a few tips for you. Number one, whenever one of my clients gets pregnant, I always say to them, I want you to eat well 90% of the time. But 10% of the time, you don't have to be pristine. So for the next 9 months, if you carry a term, once a month, have that like meal. Like, just go for it, whether it's a rack of ribs or it's, you know, a burger and fries. So I say to them, like, if you could eat like 10 things, like your favorite things, well, without getting a pound, what would they be? And they make a list of like these really decadent meals. And I say, once a month, have it. But the idea of what you were saying of just eating, and it really liberates them, because like, it sort of takes the oxygen out of something, right? Like, if you want something so belly and you don't have it, once you have it, you're like, okay, that was good. And you could sort of move on. But the idea that you can eat what you want whenever you want, because you're pregnant anyway, and who's going to notice? It is so short-sighted. And I've seen so many women, once they gave birth, really struggle to get back to their ideal body weight. And that does compound any feelings of anxiety or stress that they're already feeling postpartum. Understand that when you deliver a baby, you lose approximately 15 pounds. That includes the baby's weight, blood, placenta, and fluid. So if you gain 40, 50, or 60 pounds during your pregnancy, and you're losing 15 pounds at birth, you have anywhere from 25 to 45 pounds of weight to lose. And that's just fat. That wasn't muscle. That wasn't fluid, because you lost that during pregnancy. So why put that pressure on yourself? And that's why the recommendations for gaining weight to pregnancy have come down. It used to be 30 to 35 pounds. And now the recommendation really is 25 to 30 pounds. They realize we don't even need to gain that much because women were gaining 50, 60, 70 pounds. So there is a way to have a healthy pregnancy, definitely have splurges, you know, honor the fact that you are pregnant. When the idea of you're eating for two, you're eating for you and something that's the size of an eraser for the purse, like first 3 or 4 months. You only need an extra 300 calories. So you don't need to double your caloric intake. And I think people misunderstand that or misinterpret that, and they're eating a lot more than they need to. But when you were talking about cravings, always honor your cravings, Olivia, because what a craving indicates is your body typically is in need of that nutrient. But there are smarter ways of getting those nutrients. So for example, if you're craving ice cream, possibly your body really is craving calcium. So maybe have a Greek yogurt instead. That will be lower in fat and calories. If you're craving a juicy, you know, burger, maybe your body just really needs iron. So maybe go for like a lean sirloin or have the burger, but you don't necessarily need the bun and you don't need the fries. So if you are craving carbs, there's a baby growing inside you and that is burning a lot of energy. And carbs are used to fuel activity, both involuntary and voluntary activities. So if you need carbs, eat carbs. But let's aim for carbs that serve you, carbs that have more fiber, that are going to have fewer net carbs, so the body will not gain extra weight. But always honor those cravings, but see if you can see if what you're really craving is the nutrient, and is there a food that provides that that's healthier than what your mind thinks it's craving. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I will say the craving that I did have, and it's funny that you say like these splurge meals, because like, and I don't, this is obviously not the healthiest thing to do, so I can't even believe that I'm admitting it, but like what I do with my splurge meals is like after every one of my doctor's appointments, like that's the night that I like allow myself a treat, because I know I probably won't be going back to the doctor for a while, so I have like some time for it to like remove itself from my system. But yeah, after my last doctor's appointment, like probably a month ago, I was really craving a Cinnabon. I don't think there's anything nutrient dense about a Cinnabon, maybe some cinnamon, which is just obviously a lovely spice, but yeah. Hilarious.
But anywho, that's the point, you know, make that list. Like even when we finish today, like think of like how many more months you have left and think about the foods that normally, like when you're trying to eat healthy, you don't splurge on, and punctuate this special time in your life and have those foods and have them without guilt. There is a baby growing inside you. This is a miraculous time in your life. But what you don't want to do is just say, since I'm pregnant, I'm going to eat what I want whenever I want, because I assure you, once you give birth, and you only lose those 15 pounds and you still have 20 or 30 or 40 pounds to go, a lot of women really wish that they would have made smarter choices and that they hadn't gained so much weight. And as I said, whether you're doing that for vanity or for health, ultimately, my recommendations are coming to ensure that you have a healthy pregnancy and you can return to looking your feeling your best as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's why I think it is a combination of both vanity and health, because I feel like, yes, like when you feel better, like you look better, you feel better, like it's all wrapped up together in both like your mental state, which will obviously be in a really unique position, like once you give birth, but also just like the added stress of then like worrying about like postpartum. And sometimes you don't get cleared to like work out for, you know, 6 weeks. And then you have things like, you know, breastfeeding, which people say can contribute to obviously helping to speed along weight loss, but like those are not things you can necessarily rely on. Like you can obviously only like rely on yourself and what you put in your body, and your time becomes not your own. So it's like, if you already are in a good habit of putting good things in your body and that's what you keep in your house, making sure that like the support system around you knows that like you want to be healthy during your pregnancy and then obviously after the fact, so that it just continues to make that journey that much easier.
I totally agree. And I love good food. I mean, it's one of the reasons I showcase all my meals. You know, many people don't realize, but I was actually considering becoming a chef. So I am not someone that just proselytizes healthy food and I don't care what it tastes like. You know, some people say people live to eat or they just eat to live. I think that there's something really beautiful in between. You know, I think food should be delicious, but it should also be nurturing and nourishing. And if I can marry the two, and that is what I try and do every single day, then that's where I know F Factor can become a lifestyle for people. So even during the self-quarantine, I've been making chocolate chip cookies with one net carb. There's no sugar. So I could bring like a dozen to you as a pregnant woman, even if you had gestational diabetes. I'm like, here, enjoy these chocolate chip cookies because there's no sugar, there's fiber, it will slow down the gastric emptying, there's protein to maintain muscle mass. I mean, that's the beauty of F Factors. You're eating foods that you wouldn't dream are healthy, but are actually ridiculously healthy.
Well, I want to touch upon something that you said there, because obviously you do showcase all your meals and they look absolutely delicious. As I was saying before, like you make something and like the entire world is making chocolate chip cookies right now, which is amazing. But so, and how do you think about, like, is it a conscious decision to get your kids to eat healthy? Or is it like because of what's around, like that's what they've started to enjoy and that's what they ask for? And that's kind of just like what your family experience is? Or do you think that, you know, it will take a little bit more over time for kids to develop healthier eating habits, unless it's just, if that's all they know, then that's all they know.
It's all they know. In Europe, there's no such thing as a children's menu. I'm gonna let that sink in. If you take your kid out to eat in Europe, they do not have children's menus. In the United States, a children's menu typically is a burger, hot dogs, chicken fingers, and mac and cheese. And pasta with butter or tomato sauce. Everything is refined, everything's processed, and we have raised a generation of children who are accustomed to a low fiber, high processed diet, high in sugar, high in fat, and that's what they're used to eating. If the only bread your child has ever had was whole wheat bread, they would never know from white bread. But if you start off feeding your kid white bread and then at some point you're worried about their health and you want to encourage them to go to whole wheat bread, well, of course there's going to be a pushback. So much has to do with what you're introducing in the house. Now, moms were responsible for 70% of our children's intake. Why not 100%? Because at some point your kids go to school or they go to play dates and you're not controlling 100% of what they're eating, but you do control breakfast and you definitely control dinner. And therefore, rather than suggesting that this food is healthy food, it's just how the family eats. So I think so much has to do with the habits that they grow up on, and food should just be food. It shouldn't be healthy versus not healthy. I think that's where the diet culture has people thinking that healthy food is tasteless food. Let's just make it food and focus on foods that honor our health and honor our waistlines and get the kids involved.
I think it's a fair point and I agree. I would say, at least from my perspective, I think what, and at least something that I always struggled with is more so around like the portion control side of things, less about like actually wanting to eat healthy, because I do, like, as a human being, enjoy like eating healthy food and we always ate healthy. I think it's more so, how do you think about portion control as another element to, you know, eating healthy and like, you know, just having kids accept that like the what is being served is what is being served, and it's not that it's healthy or not, it's just food.
Right. Portions are out of control. And I call this portion distortion, that when you go out to eat, we're so overserved that now we are transferring those portion sizes to how we're serving ourselves at home. So, you know, we don't even know what normal portions look like, which is challenging. But as a rough estimate, it's basically 3 to 4 ounces for women, a little bit more for men because they're bigger. But, you know, there are tips on how to get people to sort of watch how much they're eating, you know, pre-plate in the kitchen or, you know, only go back for a second. But ultimately, it's not just the quantity, it is the quality. And I think if you eat more nutrient-dense foods, foods that have more bulk because they have more fiber, you're getting lean proteins, you're going to fill up and you're not going to need as much. But if you start off with 2 bowls of pasta before you have a salad, yes, you're going to eat all that. So, you know, I think it really has to do with parents leading by example. And there are so many studies that found that parents who eat healthy, their children are more likely to eat healthy because you lead by example. I would say you can't expect your kids to eat carrot sticks if you're eating a bag of potato chips. It's like what you eat is what they're going to eat. So you want to introduce these habits at a young age, and then it becomes their normal. You know, it's not something that you're going to force upon them once they have stronger opinions.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes I see these young mommy bloggers and like they're feeding their kids green juices and they're feeding their kids, you know, carrots. And you're like, wow, like they're imposing that. I'm like, what do you mean imposing? Like they're feeding their kids the food that God intended for them to eat before they were like rows of, you know, processed snack foods. That's not what we should be feeding our kids. We should be feeding them carrot sticks. Like how wonderful. So
right.
I wouldn't make it like that. It's like such a big deal in the sense of, you know, I want to make sure that my kids are only healthy. Just start eating more healthily yourself. Get rid of some of the processed foods, but not everything. And why not everything? Because ultimately, if you over-police your kids, those are the kids that whenever they go to their friend's house, pig out, you know, or as soon as like, right. they're out of like, you know, they're out of your like line of sight at a party, like they're like in the chip bowl, or because we always want what we can have. So while, you know, 90% or 80% of your kids' meals should be healthy, there's always room for a splurge for some chips or cookies or ice cream.
I love it. Makes sense. What are some healthy tips and swaps that you can share with the Maternity Live audience now that people are home and making their own meals? And, you know, what are like some quick and easy ways that they can just start to incorporate more fiber into their diet for all of the awesome reasons that you have been explaining to us as to why the need for fiber is really like so important for everybody really at every stage of their life, both men, both women, kids, pregnant people, people trying to get pregnant, people in the postpartum phase. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I agree. Fiber is essential for everyone. It's all natural. Kids need it, adults need it, and even the elderly population needs it. We all benefit from eating fiber. And certainly during pregnancy, you can rest assured fiber is all natural and found in so many healthy foods. So some easy swaps. Let's talk about fruit. If you are someone that normally likes melons or bananas, aim for higher fiber fruits such as raspberries, blueberries, blackberries, and strawberries. Raspberries have 8 grams of fiber. A banana has 1. Like I said, pregnant women need to get at least 35 grams of fiber a day to offset the iron in that prenatal so they don't get constipated. And they want that 35 grams of fiber to manage their blood sugar levels and to make sure that they're feeling full throughout their pregnancy so they don't overeat and, you know, rely on junk food and empty calories. So we want that fiber, ladies. So as I said, high fiber fruits, high fiber vegetables. Don't be confused by things like lettuce and the term roughage. Roughage does not mean fiber. Lettuce has 1 gram of fiber. So you want high fiber vegetables like cauliflower, broccoli, hearts of palm, asparagus. Those are great sources of fiber. Red peppers are a good source of fiber. Cucumbers and carrots a little bit less, but those cruciferous vegetables are really your best friends. And beans and legumes. So, you know, some chickpeas, a little bit of hummus, you can make a chili. Those are great sources of fiber. If you are someone who likes breakfast cereals, take a look at the side panel. Does your cereal have 5 grams of fiber or more? If not, ditch it during pregnancy. Fiber One has 14 grams of fiber. If you want something that's organic, you can use Smart Bran. They have a cereal that has 13 grams of fiber. It's called Nature's Path, is the parent company. So that's the organic choice. And then Bran Buds by Kellogg's is 13 grams of fiber. Wow. So if you have that cereal, you've met half of your fiber needs before lunch. And I would pair that with a Greek yogurt, which has double the amount of protein of milk, and it has almost no carbs because milk has a ton of carbs. So that is a great breakfast, and you could add raspberries. So imagine you're having the Smart Bran and a cup of raspberries, you're 21 grams of fiber by lunchtime. My other recommendations, F-Factor has a bar that's vegan, and it's all natural, and that's 20 grams of fiber. That's an amazing afternoon snack to hold you over and offset your hunger at dinner. For lunch and dinner, I like for people to focus on protein and vegetables. Try and keep your carbs to no more than a serving and aim for high fiber carbs, whether it's a sweet potato, some brown rice, some quinoa. But understand that carbohydrates, eaten in excess of what you're burning, will be converted into fat. And that's where the excess weight gain can come from. So you do want to focus on lean proteins and vegetables. And you also want to get some fat in your diet. Fat is essential for the transportation of fat-soluble vitamins like A, D, E, and K. And fat keeps you satisfied, and it also keeps your skin plump and your hair shiny. So that's the beauty of F-Factor, that you are going to be eating protein, fats, and carbs. If you follow me on social, this is where it gets exciting, because when you think about decadent foods like scones and chocolate chip cookies and waffles and pancakes, F-Factor has recipes that have almost no carb, filled with fiber and protein, and perfect for pregnancy as well, because they'll satisfy your cravings. I call them good for you comfort foods. So you're getting your cravings satisfied, your belly's happy, but you're also honoring your health and your baby.
Tanya, this has been so fantastic. I have like 16 different things to do immediately following this interview, including getting some Bran Buds, making myself a smoothie, drinking more water, and planning what I'm going to be having for dinner. Because I'm actually like, I'm not full of shit. And I think all of my listeners know that. Like, I have incorporated elements of F-Factor into my diet at moments in my life. Obviously, like, I have some of your products and I've had Gigi's and some things, but I feel like now more than ever, I really need to like be, I really want to actually give it a go while I'm pregnant, just for all the amazing benefits that you mentioned. And then obviously all the benefits in the postpartum. So my hope is maybe in like a couple months from now, you'll even come back on the podcast and I'll give you my own report card on myself.
I can't wait. Make you proud.
I will. But, as I promise.
Said, do it for you and do it for your baby. And I know you're going to feel amazing. And the best part is the foods that you're feeding yourself, your husband can enjoy as well. So everyone's going to benefit.
And if you want to follow Tanya or learn more about F Factor, you can follow her at Tanya Zuckerbrot on Instagram or at F_Factor on Instagram. As always, Maternity Livers, it has been a pleasure. Feel free to email me, maternitylivepod@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group, Maternity Livers. DM me, leave a review, however you feel most comfortable getting in touch. I want to hear from you. But for now, until next week, bye everyone.